This evening, we're going to be talking about mass media and other, I mean, it's going to be broad. There's a variety of titles that we kind of came up with. But Mark and Sydney Larson are the two people that are going to talk about it. And they'll each maybe have a few minutes to say something, then it's open for us to have just an open discussion about policy or whatever. So, okay. Mark, why don't you start?
All right. Well, I'd like to ask you a question first and then give you a statistic. You don't have to answer the question out loud, but how many of you have a living room in your house that's organized around the TV set? Okay, I mean, we do. We're talking about moving it out of the living room. But it's an amazing phenomenon that so many major living spaces in our homes are organized around that box.
We have a room, but it's not our living room.
Right.
It's a sitting room.
A sitting rec room. And of course, the average, then I'm going to give you two statistics. The average home in this country has almost three TV sets that work. 99% of literally 100%. Everybody has a set. Over 90% of all those sets are now color, which has shifted dramatically. Almost 60 to 5% of all Americans have cable TV, which and an average of 11 or 12 channels. And then quickly, the average American in this country and watches right at 7 hours of TV a day.
A day?
A day. Now, obviously we don't do that, right? I mean, I'm always on the wrong side of averages. Either I'm way over the average or way under. I'm never close. But what I thought I'd do first is present to you an issue that really is important to us as individuals and as society, and that is there's mass media content that we don't like. Many of us have real strong moral reactions to things like pornography, to violence, to portrayals of products as programming, and Sydney will speak to that. Many of us don't like rock music, and we wanted to entitle this, "Does Rock Music Rock Your Children's Brain or Doesn't?" And of course, every generation it's a problem with music. Do movies teach our children and us bad things to do, ranging from sex to crime to drugs, all those kinds of things? What's interesting in this country is that we have a major, major conflict over these kinds of issues, and that is that the First Amendment of the Constitution provides you or I with the right to create violent programming, erotic films that show drug use, or books about those same kinds of things, or to create music that might violate your personal values. In fact, some people do that intentionally to make a statement. And what I'm going to do quickly then is to go through a brief history of how that has been dealt with as a public policy question in this country. It started in the 1920s with a research study called the Payne Fund Study of Movies. The Payne Fund funded social scientists to look into the effects of movies on society. And they were most concerned that movies would teach us criminal behaviors, turn children into juvenile delinquents, that they would teach people to smoke and drink alcohol, consume other drugs, and that certainly erotica, or that would elicit certain types of immoral behavior. 1920. And what was interesting as a society, because the government and everyone was interested in this, because of ratings for movies. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? We're still dealing with X and R's and all those kinds of things. But this was one of the earliest times that our government wanted to find some research to support making a moral decision, that is to protect you from words and images that aren't good for you. Which violates what? The First Amendment. In the 30s then, radio then became an issue, and just to give you an example quickly, a lot of people have heard about the War of the Worlds, Orson Welles, mm-hmm. Halloween Night. Well, most of that is a myth. The researchers got stuck looking at that, and they couldn't find those huge dramatic effects of radio. And in general, we can't. Lots of people know somebody who went raving off into the streets, say, oh, it's the War of the Worlds night. During World War II, several people were hired by the military to test the effectiveness of movies on improving morale of the troops, and perhaps some of you men or women who went through World War II sat through Frank Capra's Why We Fight series to improve your morale, improve attitudes about fighting and dying in the war and that sort of thing. And guess what they could find? That in general the movies had no effect. No effect, except on information or knowledge. Who's the head of Italy's army? Well, Mussolini. Yeah. Then in the late 40s, television came on the scene. And by the early 1950s, Congress was already having hearings about violence on television. But first, let's deal with another horrible, horrible mass medium called comic books. I was 6 years old, down at the drugstore, reading comic books as whenever I could. And Dr. Frank Wertheimer wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent. It's available. But he simply had made up his mind that comic books were bad for society. Kids would turn into juvenile delinquents. It would stunt reading of children. It would expose them to sex and to all sorts of drug use and other kinds of things. And this became quite a concern to the federal government, our Congress, and they wanted to ban or rate comic books. But again, other researchers went in and looked at Wertheimer's work and said, that's garbage research. Not really good research. We cannot prove that comic books cause negative effects. By the way, this is in a context where everybody believed that the mass media really did have these massive effects. Well, television dominated society by the 60s, and again, hearings after hearings after hearings, along with the first effort by Congress to study erotica and effects of pornography. Nixon was our president, and the best researchers in the country sat down and conducted a lot of research into erotica, which, by the way, is a terribly difficult thing to study or look at because of the primary target within the erotic or pornography is women. I mean, women are always the powerless. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible portrayal of women in general in what is viewed as pornography, not erotic in this sense. But what's erotic and what's pornography? There again, we don't know. This study came out and was all run off by the government printing press. We can't find any negative effects of erotica or pornography. Nixon was so upset by that finding, he refused to allow the study out. And you can't find it. And we just went through another one just a few years ago, by the way, looking at the effects of pornography. It was released, by the way, in front of the Statue of Justice, who's a woman of blindfolded, holding a scale with one breast exposed. Mm-hmm. Which really pointed out the problems with erotica and art versus what is porn. And again, First Amendment issues. And to quickly summarize the issue then, from my perspective, rock music has been going to congressional hearings recently too, about rating. O for the occult, D for drugs, X for violence. And if you've ever watched MTV, and you probably should on cable TV if you have children, to make sure that you control MTV, personally, I think it should be viewed very judiciously. Rock videos in particular have enormous amounts of violence and race, what I would consider racist portrayals and all sorts of certain erotic thing. They wanted to do ratings on rock music, and guess what the solution was in the 20s with movies up to the present? Guess what the solution was for comic books? Guess what the solution has been for television industry? Guess what the solution has been now for rock music? The industry, yeah, nothing. Except that the industries have voluntarily agreed to do some rating. And some, for example, there's a comic book code of approval. It's stamped on it by the comic book industry. Movie industry code of approval. XR, GP13. In our family, we say if there are fewer than, no, if there are more than 23 people killed, you can't watch it. Just, but, and that's the point, right? Mm-hmm. It is a joke. All you have to do is to watch a GP13.
That's
and,
right.
And it illustrates the point that we constantly are making moral decisions about what we watch or what our children will watch in this society on a personal level, but our government is involved. Bumping into what? Protection. First Amendment. We have, however, chosen as a society to define two things. One is we will not allow children in pornography or erotica. We will limit children's advertising, which Sydney is going to talk about. And thirdly, we've defined pornography by allowing communities to define what it is. And so, for example, the defense of the two live crew, their defense was about their music as being pornographic or obscene was to go down to the corner drugstore and pick up a whole series of magazines, go to the library and check out some books, and present it as their defense. This is what our current community standards allow. Mm-hmm. We're no worse than this, mm-hmm. except that we happen to be black. Mm-hmm. Which is an issue with music, and that's not what I want to focus on. Anyway, so that's a quick history and some of the things that we can talk about. Sydney will focus on the children issue.
But just real briefly, the only thing I wanted to add is that it was decided through government policy that there was a need to protect children, both in being exploited in terms of pornography, but also in terms of children's television, and an attempt was made to not exploit children through television advertising. And there were some pretty clear regulations about what could and couldn't be done. And during the Reagan administration, when there was a real turn away from federal involvement in people's lives, all that regulation was rescinded. And with that came the birth of the 30-minute commercial, which is called a program, which is He-Man, Masters of the Universe. Currently it's Ninja Turtles. And it allowed products to be sold that that had were connect, directly connected to programs, so that separating the product advertisements from the program is basically impossible for children. And that's made a real major change in the kind of television watching children does. It's made a major change in the kind of toys that children are exposed to, that, that parents buy for their toys, and in many cases children buy for themselves. And it's made changes in the type of play that happens as a result of those toys.
Let me interrupt that briefly. The regulation for children said that there couldn't be more than 14 minutes an hour of advertising. For us adults, it's 17 minutes an hour on TV. And they, anyway, and they allowed that to go up, basically.
And it also took away the public service educational things, which the networks had to provide children's educational programming in with the Saturday morning cartoon. So there used to be news spots for children where they'd, you know, look at, okay, this, look at the globe, where is Iraq, what's happening in Iraq. That is all, since it's no longer mandatory the program that networks do that, it, of course, is no longer happening. So those are some of the changes that have happened in the programming that children watch. And children indeed can't differentiate. If you, studies have been done where children are watching television and they ask children what's the commercial and what's the program, and there is no difference to the child.
It's a real age-related phenomenon, discrimination. So that should give us some personal or stories to relate or discuss if you want to leap in.
Yeah. We have been really distressed by what we've seen happen in television. We limit what our children can watch, and it really takes a lot of effort on the part of parents to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's discouraging because if the parents don't have that energy or don't have that time or don't have that commitment, then the kids just sucking up that garbage.
Yeah.
And
4 hours a day on the average children watch.
We had recently an exposure to an associate's young 4-year-old son who was just totally wrapped up in the Ninja Turtles. I mean, he had a Ninja Turtle bicycle, he had all of the videos, he had the bungee sticks or whatever they are, he had little plastic things so he could dress up into any one of these turtles, and he was just the most hyperactive little thing I have ever seen. I mean, he was just jumping off the walls and doing all these things that they do in those videos, and both Linda and I commented that, you know, I mean, this is not normal behavior for a 4-year-old. And it was really quite distressing.
Well, I think the thing that distresses me almost as much as the media is what's happened in this country to family life and to proactive parenting, and that most parents, in our experience, and most of our friends are real intelligent, well-educated, professional people, abdicate to the TV without any discernment or discretion. I mean, whatever the kids want to watch is fine as long as the kids are quiet and don't bother them. And that's really distressing because you know that it's happening on all levels of society in the majority of homes. And it's become an electronic babysitter to the extent that parents don't even tune in to what their kids are absorbing or what those messages are. And the other thing, in terms of child development, which I know Sydney is real aware of, is that my experience with children is that kids are almost to puberty, I mean 10 to 12 years old, before the definitions between fantasy and reality become really well defined. And so when you're talking about kids who are 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, I mean, we have a 9-year-old who I know when he watches programs that have real people, that are scripted kinds of programs, it's real hard for him to sort out whether that's real as, say, 3-2-1 contact or some of the PBS programs that are science or math-oriented programs are real. It's real information, real people talking about real things. It's really hard for kids to sort that out. And so when kids are watching programming that's really violent, particularly if it's real people, it's not Ninja Turtles or something, I think it's very difficult for them to understand that that's not an okay way to relate to the rest of the world or an okay way to relate to other people. It becomes a model. And I don't think kids even begin, and I don't think parents understand.
Well, that's what's scary is the model typically is a violent solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's everything negative. It's negative sexuality. It's no compromise, no negotiating skills. It's, you know, if you don't agree, punch him in the nose kind of mentality in all the cartoons. I mean, our kids are very strictly limited in what they're allowed to watch, and even things we let them watch, like Smurfs, is a cartoon that we've okayed. Even Smurfs aren't always okay. And you know, even the old standbys like Donald Duck and Chip and Dale, when you really start watching the quality of interactions, they're not real friendly interactions.
A lot of those 50 years ago were also violent. Some of the early
cartoons.
Some of an issue that's coming up with the both of you is, you know, the parents are advocating, and maybe it isn't a First Amendment issue or anything else, it's a parental or a breakdown of the family life kind of an issue.
Well, that raises a couple of real fascinating issues, because ultimately, who owns the TV ability to broadcast? Well, we do as a society, as voters and members of society. The TV networks don't own that. I mean, that's truly ours, and we could control it through Congress in a way that we wanted to.
If we stopped watching it.
And that's the next point, right?
Because it hasn't. Boxes are what they base their whole stuff on.
This is not the what's his name's book?
1984,
where the TV's on all the time. We do have that control.
Well, and parents have that authority. And you know, one of the things that was a story in our community, we're from Oregon, and in Eugene, there was a big front page article a year ago in the Eugene paper about these two boys who were up with the national average, I mean 6 and 7 hours a day of television, and their parents were real frustrated by that. So they told them that they would pay them $500 each if they didn't watch TV for a whole year. And so they did. And so there was this huge front page article of this father, you know, handing this money to these kids and portraying it as a really neat thing. Mm. So that was some kind of a solution for this problem. And Hugh and I just said, why didn't they just turn it off?
Right.
You know, unplug it. It's like there's this whole... Mm. And again, what message does that give to these kids? Because they didn't learn anything. As soon as the year was up and they got their $500, they turned the TV back on to make up for lost time.
I think a lot of the parents of children that age now were themselves probably parented the same way. In other words, they're the second generation to do something.
Right.
They grew up watching TV and the parents didn't bother.
Except the quality of what's on now. I mean, society's changed so much in the interim that it's a whole different
ballgame.
But
still, the studies that these mentions come back to the point that doesn't seem to have that effect.
It has effects, and I'm going to get to that, but not in very many people.
I was going to say, I have a hard time believing that it doesn't have effects.
Yeah.
I mean, the violence, when you think of... I mean, what's the average, if you go to a movie, number of deaths per hour? It's something like 65 or 120 or something. Well, I went to a showing in Chicago at the Museum of Photography from Central America. It was called Crossings. It was every other picture of persons who were traveling into the United States to escape what was going on down in Central America, particularly El Salvador, Nicaragua. And then also what was happening in El Salvador and Nicaragua. And in there was the most gruesome picture I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, I saw it, I stood back, I flinched and started to cry because I didn't think that was possible to do to a human being. I went back there a couple of weeks later with a friend who had spent time in Central America. And as we were going through, there were three boys, ages 8, 9, 10, 11, something in that range, walking through with their father. And I was just sort of interested to know what their response would be to it if they had. They didn't even blink. I mean, they looked at it and they went and grabbed, they went, came running over and grabbed their friend and said, "Look at this." And they were just, I mean, I have a difficult time believing that they, in seeing that level of violence, have not been desensitized or anesthetized by that. So, I mean, how do you measure those effects?
That's an effect, and it is an effect that, unfortunately, the question is, does that harm the child? Or, you see, society. The conflict that we face as a society, let's just deal with a violent movie like...
Die Harder?
Whatever. I mean, I haven't seen that, but...
I haven't either. But
we've all watched a violent movie. And there's two real interesting and competing theories about what might happen. One theory suggests that if a person was kind of aroused by the movie and so on, an aggressive, violent movie might actually have some cathartic effect, and they would walk out kind of relieved. They used to tell us that about watching football, that instead of stimulating aggression, playing or watching football would have a catharsis. You'd get your aggressions out in a safe way. The opposite theory says that you learn how to be violent or imitate how to be violent. That's what the danger with children. Mm-hmm. If they don't learn how to be violent, they imitate. And this is what research actually shows. Because you're really right. We're all right. We all know violence and certain types of pornographic material and so on are bad for individuals, certain individuals. And what we know is that people who are angry, or children who are angry, adults who are on some type of drug, such as alcohol or other drugs, that distort reality already. People who are frustrated with life a little bit. People who feel powerless. People who are extremely heavy users of this, lastly. Those people suffer negative effects from violence. I mean, they become more violent. Mm. You show an angry, frustrated man who's an alcohol or drug user pornography, it's not a catharsis. Research shows over and over and over. You show children violent movies or the types of action adventure stuff, that's not a catharsis for those kids. Your four-year-old, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze your example of a four-year-old, and I don't think you should either, but there are some types of people who really react to this content, and we know who they are.
I think they're broader than, I was reading, and I wish I could remember where and all the details of a study done with college fraternity men,
right.
Boys, who they originally surveyed as to their how they treated women,
right.
Whether they thought rape was okay, whether they thought of things like this, and they were very, much a normal cross section. They fed them pornography on a daily basis,
right.
And by the end of it, they all thought rape was fine.
Yeah,
no problem.
Let me give you, and I mean the problem is, these studies are all very select.
Yeah, I mean I don't remember the details, right. To know who did it and what the control group,
right.
was or anything.
Let me give you another contradictory example. recently in a prison, which is the most horrific kind of situation I think we can do to humans. They recently started to show violent movies to the prisoners. And guess what happened? The rates of violent acts in the prison went way down. You look at that and you go, what happened here? I'm reading the story, and you know what really is what caused the drop in crime? They allowed the prisoners to pick the movie. You see how things can be mixed in with aggression, Daddy. With frustration, with anger. Yeah. And your example, most people will show no effect. The switch to something that Linda said that's truly important about children, though, and maybe we could focus on that in terms of children for a second. You mentioned watching it with your children. Mm-hmm. You can show children the worst violence. I wouldn't do it personally with our children. You can show them cartoon programming that's the worst ads for Ninja Turtles and all that sort of thing. And if it's mediated with the presence of a parent or someone who will talk and mediate the experience, the effects go way down to almost nothing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we do know so much about how to eliminate the effects of what effects there are.
Hey, Mommy. Hi, Mommy.
What?
Hey, Daddy. Hey, Mommy. Hey, Mommy.
It strikes me, and this is not only in this area that we're talking about, but in many areas, we're reaching a point where we're trying to fine-tune what's going on, and for example, take all the ecological issues, the loss of ozone, and the warming trends, and all that sort of stuff. We can't design experiments that are scientifically valid by the scientific method in order to prove this, because the thing is happening at either such a slow rate or such a fast rate that you can't, and there are too many variables so that you can't pinpoint it. And we hear of two different studies that are on opposite ends of the spectrum, yet every one of us here in this room knows anecdotally that there is an effect, that there is an effect on violence that's happening in our society, yet the government bodies who are, you know, relying on studies, quote unquote scientific, that, you know, theoretically can be repeated and validated, but just the subtle thing of allowing prisoners to choose the movie invalidates the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that you can do whatever you want, and it's really frustrating when we need to, as a community and as a nation and as a country and as a world, you know, prove certain things so that we can take some action to correct something, and we can't do it.
But one thing that we can do is, since we know that with parental mediation you can counter the effects, that what we can do is educate parents about, and grandparents, because in many cases what the grandchildren are being exposed to isn't necessarily what the grandparents would choose, but they don't have the choice to mediate that. So to educate the caring parents to, in the behaviors of, well, how did you feel when you saw that? And how do you think the victim felt? And to try and counter some of that so that children can make some sense out of basically nonsensical things that they're watching.
One of the things that's really frustrating about that is that, you know, we all care about that. That's why we came to the forum to talk about it. But we are in such a minority. How do we implement something that's going to affect the thousands and thousands and thousands of parents who have basically abdicated their parental rights or parental
responsibilities
is the correct term. And so that the kids can play, watch whatever they want on television, play Nintendo for 12 hours a day or whatever. And then, and how, so going back to what Mark was talking about earlier, giving us examples of the federal government's attempts to kind of get a handle on this and kind of direct it to the benefit of society as a whole. And we just see, for example, just in demography, and I can't give you any exact figures, but we're seeing if you will, the educated people are having fewer children, and the undereducated or uninformed or whatever, however you want to define it, they're multiplying like rabbits. And
those are the people who don't have
and those are the people who don't have the parenting skills, who are not, and it doesn't take a sophisticated mathematician to see that, you know, a generation, a friend of mine and I were talking one day, and it was really kind of shocking because, you know, generational time, he had his first child when he was 30 and I was 31, and then we're seeing so that our sons will have sons, and so you'll have three generations.
And daughters.
Well, it happened to be that Jerry had two sons and I had two sons. I'm not even women.
just checking that.
In 60 years, you know, we've only produced X number of progeny, maybe four. And in that same 60 years, these other folks have got four generations.
Yeah, an extra generation.
Two.
If the reproduction time is 15 years, or you have, or 17 years. And that's kind of getting out of the area, but it kind of ties in a way with the federal government and trying to do something.
It's the fear that I think everybody has, is that somehow we can be overwhelmed by what society or by our mass media. But in fact, one of the responsibilities that you and your friend and all of us, I mean, if we see something on the TV, for example, that we don't like, we should A, turn it off, or when you get your ratings survey from Nielsen or whoever, you should put down the things that you do watch or and. But you also need to be an active writer. You need to call the station managers. You need to call the advertisers, the programming that you don't like. I mean, you have to fight back with TV. With television and with rock music and all that stuff, I think it's just a matter of monitoring your children the best you can.
And beyond station managers, you can also write to the product sponsors and let them know that you won't be supportive of that product because they're sponsoring that kind of program.
Right.
And what bothers me most is to read or have somebody say that you should be able to produce programs like this because that's life.
Yes.
Everybody does it. I mean, that's the way people live.
Well, the issue when you raise what they're really saying is that everyone has a right, for example, to stand up and lie.
Yeah.
And that's what the First Amendment of the Constitution says. Mm-hmm. Except that you can't yell, and this is a joke, you can't yell theater in a crowded fire. It's actually, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, right? And endanger other people's lives, and you can't slander and libel people, and you can't incite a riot. But artists who make their living from writing books or writing movies or creating music, I mean, that's where the conflict comes as a society. And when you see countries or visit countries that rigorously control mass media, I personally say, let's face the dangers of too much content rather than not suffering, letting somebody else decide what we're trying to do. But that's my personal belief. However, here's an example of the next generation who's going to have the choice of Nintendo to cable TV and on and on.
Well,
and
you know, it's a real interesting spiral too. You said that people say that's what life is in their life, but it becomes like a mirror image that really confuses people because the media says they're reflecting life.
Right.
So then adolescents and young people start modeling what they see in the movies because that's real life and that's the way to act when you're grown up. So the world starts becoming like the movies, and so then the movies get more violent, and it just gets really messed up.
Let me raise another interesting issue, though. If any of you watched a Shakespeare play, or read Grimm's fairy tales, or grew up on other folk tales and little folk stories, we were raised on some very horrifically violent folk tales in Grimm, for example. And that's life? Well, of course not. That was a Grimm fairy tale. And boy, I was scared to death as a kid by those
things.
Without the mass media, except books and folk tales. We will always have violent stories. We will always have issues like that. The question is, in my mind, how do we prevent heavy use of Nintendo? How do we prevent elderly folks sitting in their room watching TV for 8-10 hours a day, growing to believe that that's the way life is out there? In other words, it's heavy users of movies, heavy users of and there's types of rock music that I think have content that your children people shouldn't listen to heavily. Depressing. And maybe causing people to be aggressive. Well, there was, for example, two young men sat smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol for 9 hours listening to Stained Glass by Judas Priest, then went out and committed suicide with a shotgun. Their parents sued over the lyrics. But what did I just mention as fairly contributing variables there? No supervision by parents, heavy drug use, and of at least two different types, depressants, type of drug, and a past history of violence and aggression and lack of supervision. I mean, that's the point. Some people, some children, some adults show some kind of effect. From some kinds of content.
One thing that's frustrating, I think, about the media, and we had a presentation here earlier this summer by a counseling social worker who dealt with young people and had some interesting statistics and talked about the percentage of young people that had problems. He was describing the normal adolescent development and mentioned that only a very small percentage, like I don't know, 5 or 10, really had real severe problems. But 80% of the kids were normal.
Right.
You know, I thought, hallelujah, that's great news. That's good news. You know, because the presentation that you get from the media, these elderly people who are watching the television, well, my word, who wants to go to the store anymore? They're going to get blown away. So they're seeing this on the television, we're seeing this, and we see nothing but the sensationalism that will, you know, that unfortunately sells.
That's the problem.
Sells, whether it's the ratings for the TV shows or sells the magazines, the Newsweeks and the Times, they have to put the sensationalism in order to get the magazines to be purchased. So you end up with a very warped presentation of what's really going on. We several times threatened just to cancel our newspaper subscription because we just get tired of hearing about all this junk.
They claim that nice stories don't sell newspapers, though.
That's the problem.
And it appears to be a problem. Yeah, over and over again that people just don't consume that type of
But what is it about
information?
Human nature or our society or our world that makes that the majority choice?
And the,
I don't think that's a recent phenomenon. I think that's always been the case. Gossip and rumor mongering and all those kinds of things has always been human nature.
Well, the older I get, the more I begin to realize that.
I think we just have a fascination with the dark side, so to speak. I mean,
people go to auto racing.
But then the scary question is how, where are we going from here? Because it's gotten so bad, and look. Well, you look at the books, like there was a book that was written just a couple of years ago called The Rise and Fall of the Great Empires, and actually compares the Roman Empire to Western civilization at this point, where people became so fascinated and so eager for more and more and more stimulation. I mean, at the gladiatorial games and the orgies and, you know, the food and the tremendous decadence, and you can really see the comparison with what's happening in Western civilization. And it's like, how far can we take this thing? I mean, how perverse and how violent is the human appetite?
Well,
I don't know. I mean, to me, that's a real frightening thing, because it keeps getting worse, and I keep not being able to imagine that it can get worse. that it can get worse.
Well, I think that for myself, the real issue boils down to where do people learn their values. And if you're learning your values from the TV set, I think a child would be in trouble or very confused. And what I would see where, I mean, I moved from the Midwest to California, and a friend of mine who moved did the same thing, said that he could no longer use, just to give an example in philosophy classes, he couldn't use biblical analogies anymore or biblical references because on the West Coast. And I'm not singling out the West Coast, but I do think that, for example, our upbringing, maybe make a generality here of reading the Bible or Bible study. Now that's not a common phenomenon anymore, even in religious homes. And back to the main point is, there's an awful lot of value-free young people running around. They don't know the difference between right and wrong relative to society's morals. And that's the scary part, again, for me. It's not the TV, because frankly, I again think way over 90% of everybody watching a violent film and all that stuff, there's never going to be any effect.
I mean, there's not going to be a violent act that results out of that.
I mean, 99% of everybody.
But how do you define what is effect?
Exactly.
I mean, the inner confusion and the turmoil or the distress that people feel, whether it's ever acted out. You know, another something you and I have talked about a lot that I feel very upset with the media about. If you look at the divorce statistics in our country over like the last 20 years, I mean, you've skyrocketed. It's up to like 60% now. So that 6 out of 10 marriages are ending in divorce. And when you look at the media and you look at the presentation of marriage in the media, there's nothing healthy about it. There's nothing in written literature, there's nothing on TV, there's nothing in the movies that depicts what a solid, healthy marriage is, that it's struggle and it's hard work and it's compromise and it's negotiation that's never ending. It's not like you do it for a year and then everything's okay and you live happily ever after. You know, in the media, marriage is portrayed as an all or nothing. Either you get married and you immediately live happily ever after and you never have an argument and you never have a disagreement and everything's always wonderful. Or you must have married the wrong person so you get a divorce and try again. And I see that as directly related to the divorce rate in this country, because in our children's classes in school, and I'm sure it's true all across the country, probably 2/3 of their classmates are in single parent families because of divorce. And
even more so, well, I don't know if it's even more so, but to me, another part of the mass media, the good, the gossip story tells celebrities are so held up, and they go to divorces constantly.
Or never bother to get married.
Or never bother to get married.
They still go with time on TV.
Yeah, but I mean,
they don't have married anymore.
Zsa Zsa and Liz Taylor, you know, their seventh and eighth husbands. And that's more of that. These people
and
are
that
idolizes
it even more, right?
Mm-hmm. You can expand that, though, to lifestyles having to do with substance abuse.
Exactly.
Professional
athletes,
with
renegotiating contracts and going out on drugs. And I mean, the people who were unfortunately were holding up as idols are not worthy of that anymore. They were from their own.
To give you a few more, I mean, I think it's possible to say that high divorce rates may not be a bad thing. It's also possible to say that it is a bad thing. But I don't think that the portrayals, for example, the use of weapons in movies and TV, which far exceeds reality, is a good thing. And I'm just throwing out some content other than that. I don't think the portrayal of car driving on TV and movies is a good thing.
Seatbelt use.
Yeah, or smoking.
And smoking.
Or smoking. The tobacco industry getting cigarettes into the movies.
Fortunately, that's dropping off. But what I'm really saying to you as food for thought.
Because the whatchamajiggers come home to roost. We're 30 to 40 years post-World War II, and the people were young in their 20s and started smoking during World War II, nobody knew what the effects of tobacco were.
See, that's
now,
the plus
side. Cancer of the lung is killing just as many women as it is killing men. It's surpassed, 1988, I think, it surpassed cancer of the breast as the number one killer.
But
seeing the effect. And so people are going, hey, maybe it's not such a good idea
to
smoke.
Yeah.
See,
but also some corporations are getting in on. I work for Pemco, which is a Washington-based private casualty insurance company, and they write letters daily to movies who have people driving too fast, commercials.
Good.
When was the last time you saw a commercial where an Acura or anything else was driving a highway road at 30? You know, they're going 80.
The point.
And so they write to him constantly about that.
The point being this is we all have subject matters, and you can make some really horrific lists of tobacco or car driving or the presence of weapons in story after story after story. It's just incredible. And it goes on. I mean, there are many things. The lack of reading. When was the last time you saw somebody reading on TV, you know,
my
in a movie?
Microphone.
But the flip side of it is,
and
I do think a positive note has to be linked to this, is that the mass media can teach pro-social behavior in a very effective way.
If it would.
That's the point.
But it's got somehow, we've got to flip around.
It does, well, Cosby.
Yeah.
And
Simpsons?
Yeah. There's a real funny story from several years ago. Remember the Fonz?
Yeah.
On TV? And that was a pro-social show in a very positive way, I thought. And funny. And the Fonz got a library card as part of one show. And the next week, library card amongst children went way, way up. I mean, we're talking 20-30% higher than normal, and that's huge effects.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that was just in the paper is that Fox Network now is going to put The Simpsons opposite the Cosby Show.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be curious to see which one wins.
Yeah. Well, the point there is
the Cosby Show.
Yeah, only 30 or 40% of the TV viewers actually watch Cosby. And segmentation is the key thing. I mean,
What's segmentation?
Of the 100% of people who watch TV at any given time, they're divided way, way up.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're spread all over the place.
Cosby has probably top ratings, and again, only about 30% of all viewers are watching Cosby at the time.
Because how many channels?
Because
potentially.
Of cable. Because of cable. the highest viewer of ever on a percentage basis is the Super Bowl, and that just barely pops over 50% at that time. The other 50%.
Pretty high.
And we wonder why we watch it, because it's such
huge.
A bad game.
Right.
Oh, it's a bad game.
But that's, I would argue that, remember we talked about writing letters and phone calls. How many of us have ever called or written a letter complimenting somebody on saying, we will watch this show.
Mm.
Or written a producer of movies and say, thank you for, what's that, the Parenthood? Or what was that movie that we liked?
Parenthood.
I mean, that's the type of behavior that's also responsible.
I didn't do it, but I thought about it and I made a list, but we've been watching this show, 911.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know if any of you have seen that. Some of it is a little dramatization, but it doesn't matter. It's showing basically real life situations, people doing deeds for service and caring for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so such a contrast between what you want to see. It really stands out. But maybe with. And when we see what happens, what cigarettes do, causing cancer, and it's taken 20 years for finally the environmental movement to catch on, we've seen some tremendous advances in diet. I mean, you think about the typical portrayal of a man, say, in his 40s, say 20 years ago, it was someone who was overweight and had very tragic existence. So on, and now there's a generation where there's more consciousness about what you eat, and exercise is being a part of your life, and we're even seeing in our town, we're seeing more and more people out walking, taking morning walks, and a general thinning down, and more consciousness of diet, so that's pretty important.
But I think those are the kinds of things that we need to remember. It's real easy to get yourself into a woe is me, the world's falling apart and everything's worse than ever. But you stop and look and things have changed. Women have made tremendous progress in terms of jobs available and salaries, although not to say that we're where we need to be, but progress is made. People are more conscious about diet and weight. People are conscious about alcohol as a drug, that smoking is a drug. I mean, there are changes being made. And I think it's really important to remember that we're not just totally backsliding into
oblivion. Reduction in smoking here, it's amazing that that has taken such an effect. You know, and the ones that are left are ones that are kind of really tied in that they can't get rid of it, they'd like to, maybe.
Young women are the worst.
Got over past that, yeah.
Young women are the worst, the highest percentage.
They took it up when the men starts quitting.
But that's an interesting point in and of itself.
Right.
I mean, how old was I? I don't know, I can still remember the advertisements on TV for Salem or whatever. When they were advertised, government came in, regulated, made a decision about that, and what have been the long-term effects of that. I mean, on the one hand, the idea of determining, regulating, coming up face-to-face with the First Amendment is appalling when you consider how it's utilized by fundamentalists or individuals who want to say that 1984 or Catcher in the Rye or whatever are books that should be gotten rid of or Wagnerian operas are just incredible in terms of the incest, the violence, the drugs and alcohol, and yet it's considered art. Yet in that situation, there was regulation that ultimately
for the
good of the...
Yeah, for the broadcast medium only.
Yeah.
Cigarettes are still allowed to be advertised on all print media.
Right.
Because of First Amendment issues.
That's the drug we're exporting now.
And we're exporting. The other issue there that happened, of course, is that many advertisers are bailing out of television right now because of that segmentation issue and going to print magazines. For example, I would predict everybody here, and I already know about you, has a very specialized magazine in your home other than a religious magazine with advertising in it. And that's where advertising is going. And that's where young women are targeted with cigarette ads right now so heavily.
But what about kids? I mean, when they're targeting they're doing it through different things. Now they're marketing.
I know one more thing that you can complain about to your local school board. Do not let that channel one into your school with information and so on supported with advertising. That's my personal belief. It's a moral judgment that that's not fair to your children in your school. So watch for that. It's a commercial news venture aimed at grade school kids to be brought in by cable, but with paid advertising. That's nasty. I mean, that's the sort of thing that I think is serious.
I don't remember you younger people.
Yeah.
But we used to get candy, and it was a lighted cigarette. It was five.
Sure.
I get to take my notes for a long time.
Right.
Let's talk about a civil.
Or not so subtle.
Isn't it incongruous, though, that with all on the television you can see the extreme violence, the absolute horrors and violence and so forth? You cannot show an actor drinking a glass of beer.
That's right.
And it's being pregnant.
Right.
Well, that's an interesting thing, I think, with the movie regulating thing is everyone has different tolerance levels of what they do and don't want their children to see. And I personally would be less concerned about my children seeing what might be considered sexual then in a loving, caring way than violence.